In this Edgar interview, we talk with Trent Blucher of Australia, who has formed a unique partnership with G4D golfer Stephen Alderson, better known as Spud. As Spud's caddy, Trent has supported his player on and off the golf course in G4D events and in travelling in Australia, but also Spain, England, Sweden, and the United Arab Emirates. In just 1 year, Spud has been through so much, and for caddy Trent, he has discovered just how significant his role has become to help his great friend. Enjoy this chat. Asking the questions is Edgar President Dr. Tony Bennett.
Oh, here we go. Great. Well, I'm here with Trent, and we're at Boxskogen Golf Club, of all places, in Sweden. Here's a guy from Portugal and a guy from Australia meeting in Sweden on the occasion of the European Individual Championship by the EGA. And it's fantastic to have you with us, Trent, because you've brought along Spud. And Spud made a bit of a splash last year in October down in Sotogrande in Andalusia. But you've been very much part of that journey, and I thought it'd be just great to catch up with you a little bit, because it's not far off exactly 12 months. It's not quite exactly, but it's not far off 12 months since you got a phone call from Spud and said, hey, do you fancy coming out to Spain and support me, to caddy for me and be with me in Andalusia? So I thought it'd be nice to just recap that 12 months and see how things have been, and you know, how life's maybe changed for Spud, maybe a little bit for yourself, and some of the things that Spud's experienced over the last 12 months. So,
yeah, sure. So, key points. I haven't brought Spud along. Spud has brought me along. And there's a fair difference there. It's I remember the first phone call. It was, one mate helping another mate. When you ring a mate and you ask for help, you know, I think it's pretty universal. The default is to say yes if you can help. But little did I know what was going to happen. We went to Spain, and I can remember stressing about the cost of an Uber from the airport to the resort. And then when we got there, and just on that, we caught a bus instead of an Uber. We didn't have any spare pennies, and a week later, we're on national television in Australia, and I asked Golf Australia for help. I think at one point they had two media people just fielding inquiries for me, just to help with scheduling. We made a promise to say yes to everyone, and we set aside Tuesday every week. So we said to Golf Australia, say yes, schedule it Tuesday, and then I would meet Spud at his golf club and we would do interviews all day. And that lasted for weeks. He got home. Of course, we were 3 weeks later, we were in Dubai. A couple of weeks after that, we were at the Australian Open. In between there, he had his WebEx event in his home course, which he was defending. It seemed that every grandparent in South Australia turned out to support him that day, and he felt that. But he got it done there as well. And then, we've had invitations from the South Australian Premier to play at the LIV Golf Adelaide Pro-Am. So we got to play 9 holes with Tom McKibben, 9 holes with Tyrrell Hatton. He got sledged by Tyrrell. Just fantastic experiences. And it was a valid sledge. It was good fun.
I can imagine that Tyrrell's pretty good at sledging.
Yeah, he's a great bloke. What I like about Tyrrell, when you see a YouTube clip and he's swearing and carrying on, he's always swearing and carrying on about himself, we all should do that. He's a ripper bloke and can certainly hit a golf ball. Just those inside the rope privileges have been amazing. And Spud treats a Friday Ambrose with retirees at his home club with the same importance as he did LIV Golf for Australian Open or here this week. I mean, the golf is his life every day, and sometimes I find it frustrating because I'm trying to, organise something. I need passports, or I need this, and he's just focusing on, Friday Ambrose for $4 with a couple of mates at the golf club. But that's how he rolls. It's great.
So, once Bud went along and look, the DP World Tour did a fantastic job, you know, putting on the event, and it was the first time that they'd done in 2024, it was the first time they'd had net events on the G4D Tour. Mm-hmm. Previously, it had always been gross events. Mm-hmm. And so that opened up the opportunity to play a G4D Tour event to a whole bunch of new players.
Yes.
I think that was really powerful.
Yeah.
But when Spud got his kind of invitation to play, did he realise the sort of the magnitude of that?
No, not at all. well, I don't think so. I don't want to speak on his behalf, but I think the magnitude of media coverage is the thing. Spud won a South Australian event in the All Abilities at Cooyonga a couple of weeks before, and because I'd said I was coming to Spain, I hadn't caddied for Spud for quite some time. It was a two-round event, and I said, well, I better jump on the bag. We better practice me being caddy. So I caddied the first round, and another fellow caddied the second round. Spud won that. But it was, you know, a one-page website article, you know, Stephen Alderson wins, you know, the event, and that was it. But then when he won the tournament in Spain and the interview went viral, it was a completely different magnitude of attention. That's the reality of the world. People, you know, the spotlight goes to the champion. And the golf industry is so huge. There's a new champion. Like I've been saying it every week, but it's not. It's every day. You know, there's someone winning a trophy somewhere. So to keep that spotlight on you constantly is just not going to happen. It's someone else's turn tomorrow, you know. But I don't think he had any comprehension at all about how big it was. We didn't come to Spain with a real intention of winning it, because we didn't know the structure of the field and that sort of stuff, but it didn't take us long. We're both very hungry for trophies. That's something we get along very well with. I'm super competitive with no ability, and Spud is super competitive with a lot of ability. But we like trophies. But we had no idea it was going to blow up like it did. We were standing at Malaga Airport, and Spud's looked at his phone. He says, "I've gone viral." I was like, "Yeah, like genuinely viral."
A couple of things, yeah. I remember very clearly is that I met him on the practice day, and I said to him, "Do you like the golf course?" And he went, "I love it." He said, It's pretty straightforward. Mm. This is Sutter Grand. This is not a straightforward golf course. But he said it's pretty straightforward. He said it's like, it's kind of like my golf course, but, you know, wider.
Yeah.
And, you know, he sort of saw that, he just saw it as pretty straightforward. It obviously suited his eyes. That was one thing that stuck out. Mm. And I think I probably even said to my wife Sue when we went back, I said, well, Spud seems to be very confident. He likes it. I hope that confidence can transfer into, you know, performance, because, you know, sometimes we say we like things and then we go out there on the first day, it's not quite as easy as we thought it was on the practice day. Mm. So, but then he produced, you know, a very good score on the first day. I think the second thing that strikes me is the interview that he did when he collected the trophy in the flash presentation. Mm. Was so authentic. I mean, it was just so genuine, so authentic, so natural that you couldn't not have that go viral, because clearly, you know, it was from the heart, it meant something, and people that heard it, read it, saw it on the TV could only relate and go, wow, that's powerful. Mm. So, you know, all credit to him, because he obviously produced the goods and then was just authentic, which I think Spud, from my very limited knowledge of him and my very limited interactions with him, I've been with him a few times now, but not many, he seems to be like that all the time. He seems to be just says it as it is.
Yeah, and he lives golf. That's his life, 24/7. There's two things embedded in that. With one is the opportunity. We stayed at, is it San Roque?
San Roque,
right? So we walked in, and there's the, for those that don't know, the putting green in front of the clubhouse would be, I would say, at least six times the size of the putting green, that Spud has at his home course at Wollunga. There's no chipping range as such. There's no short game facilities of any real note. There's a driving range and, you know, like golf clubs all over the world. But the facilities that he had access to for 3 days before the event were just elite level. So there's the opportunity for him to prepare properly. And that's why I think we were joking through the first round. Every time someone was standing behind the pin on a par three, he'd stick it within 6 feet. Any time someone was watching, or if there was a camera and he had a shot from 100 metres, he was, you know, sticking it straight on. His wedges were just dialed in for the entire tournament. And he was putting unbelievably well, calmly, because he'd had elite facilities to prepare. And the flip side of that is we go home, if he's slightly off, he'll very quickly default into blame that he doesn't have the facilities to practice in. So he's got to learn the fact that, well, he could win club championship without the facilities before, so he can still do that. Nothing's changed there. So that was just the opportunity to prepare was incredible, and he took full advantage. And even here this week, he's walked in, the first thing we see is the putting green, and his eyes just light up. And then the obsession comes in, so I've got to make sure he spends 2 hours out there today, not six. It's just as important for him to have a rest this afternoon as it is to practice. And we've done a few of these trips now, and my role, I've really, just through observation, I've worked out that he has to arrive on the first tee well-rested, well-fed, and he has to also, it's just, you know, that basic human need for food security and shelter. He has to know where he's sleeping. He has to know that he's going to be where he's going to be eating, and that might sound easy, but he literally will only eat roast potatoes, chicken schnitzel, boiled egg, and a pancake. Now, if he's playing, what I've learned is if he's playing the first round of a tournament and he doesn't know where he's having dinner tonight, that's a stress, and that shows up on the scorecard. But this week, he will know where he's having dinner. He'll know he can have a good breakfast. He knows he can practice. So he'll sleep well. He'll eat well. But he won't stress about those aspects, which you and I wouldn't. That wouldn't affect our golf game. But it does, Spud. And then coming back to being genuine in his interview, you know, he lives and breathes golf. So has he had media training? No. But, you know, if he's not playing golf, he's watching golf. So how many thousands of hours of victory interviews has he watched? So straight away when he was asked, he tapped into, you know, thanking sponsors and thanking the wonderful people of Spain and inviting everyone to his home course. He's heard all of these interviews before. But he had the freedom of just being Spud. He didn't have no obligations for sponsors and that. So he just spoke freely back in Australia, there's a meeting. There's the shared facilities of the PGA and Golf Australia in the same building, and they have a once a month or however long it is, a meeting. Apparently, the video was played, and someone said, "Oh, well, you know, who did his media training?" It was that Christian. Was it Trent? Christian rang me and said, "No, it wasn't me. I'm not taking any credit for that interview. That was just Spud, and he just responded." And the bullying aspect transcended golf.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because there are very few people that haven't been bullied at some point at school or been the bully, and he just spoke from the heart, and that connected with people. So if he's wearing a Callaway cap at the airport, someone that doesn't play golf is going to come up and go, "Are you that guy?" And he is, and he'll chat, be polite, say thank you. He loves it, and he actually has loved being famous. And he'll tell you he's dreamed of being famous his whole life. So that's there, and I am. There is the flip side of that. I am concerned. You know, the time will come. He'll wake up, and there won't be anyone saying "well done" on his Instagram. And so that's the next part of his journey. He has to learn. If that's the case, he has to learn that that's part of life, and that'll be in front of him.
Your role is clearly, and even though it's like you quite rightly said, it's a couple of mates. I'm not too sure. And tell me if I'm wrong, that you kind of realised what it was going to be when you got on the plane going to Sotto Grande. I reckon it was something different when you got on the plane going back from Sotto Grande to Australia.
For sure.
Because your role certainly in supporting him throughout this journey is way more than a caddy.
Sure.
He's very much a mate, but also a mate that's got a bit of a business head on them, that's trying to manage all of the stuff that's coming in. You know, as a mate, you've got a job, you've got your work to do, you've got a living to make. But, you know, you've got to try and manage all of this stuff as well that's coming in for Spud, and try and protect him to some degree from himself.
Yeah.
And to try and, you know, maximise the opportunity that he's got.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's two parts to that. So when we were on our way to Spain, you're certainly not as arrogant to sort of really do any planning on what does it look like when you bring the trophy home. But the opportunity and the invitation is so immense and great because, you know, there's the quote, to travel is to live. I've been very fortunate in my life to have travelled from an early adult age. And, you know, the lessons I've learnt in life have quite often been through travel. So we knew that was going to happen. And I just saw that as a great opportunity for Spud. So whether he came first or whether he came last, it was going to change Spud's life. So then, as it turns out, he wins the trophy and it changes it and it just amplifies it times 100. So now the business aspect of it is, and again, you know, it has only been 10 months and we're being patient. I haven't been able to commit full time to generating revenue for Spud. There's no prize money, and we've both got strong opinions on that, which are basically that it's not about prize money, it's about inclusion, it's about opportunity and tapping into that golf is life ethos that, you know, golf is a brilliant sport that brings people together. You know, we talk about Spud's journey being bullied, and for all the trophies and all the media attention, Spud goes home to his home golf club, and the members there are fantastic towards Spud, but Spud doesn't get invited to the golf trip. You know, Spud doesn't get invited to the 40th birthday party. You know, Spud's life is golf, and there's a lot of invitations that Spud doesn't get. You know, and he sees people go off on golf trips and parties and these sorts of things. So, you know, when we talk about inclusion, it's not just about do you get a spot on the first tee. There's a lot more to it than that.
With every upside, there's always a downside. Mm-hmm. The upside is clearly that, you know, Stephen Alderson is perhaps not as well known as Spud.
Yeah.
People will know Spud, they'll have heard of Spud, especially down in Australia. They'll have heard of him, and that brings its own attention. Some of that attention will be really good, some of that attention will be really bad. How have you managed to navigate some of that, and how have you been able to help Spud to understand that it's not all good?
Yeah, well, we've been fortunate, actually. There is the, you know, there's always the two sides to the coin, but, you know, we haven't seen a lot of the bad stuff, really. There's been an example there where there was some bullying, and, you know, just someone sort of saying, you know, if you think you're a celebrity, you're dreaming and having a crack and all of that. But we dealt with that, and we dealt with that by speaking up, and his president got involved, and the other general manager got involved, and those sorts of things. So the big picture, I think, is I speak of being mindful of the lick of the ice cream, that, you know, what happens if in a year's time there are no more invitations, there's no more money to travel. You know, I've lost count however many times we've flown to Europe now. I think this is our fourth time or something like that. And you're talking, in Australian dollars, sort of $10,000 is a minimum every trip, and it's got to come from somewhere, and we're pretty much at the end of that road. So we have to find other revenues, and if that will largely fall on me, if I can't generate those revenues, then we're going to have to, that will affect the calendar. But I'm pretty committed on that. And, you know, I mean, you can't go on a journey thinking it's going to end tomorrow. Spud's resume, in actual fact, he doesn't have to win another trophy. There's a career in the golf world for Spud. And that might just be, you know, I think we see it in the world. There's not enough emphasis on putting a putter in a kid's hand. You know, Spud's brilliant working with kids, and he can teach a kid how to putt in 3 minutes flat. And if that spuds life, then he won't be able to work, you know. But it's about tempering it. And it's about making sure that these great adventures, that if in 20 years' time he's not playing golf, but he's telling someone, he can tell a story and have fond memories of having fun. You know, we talk about chasing trophies, but you don't win trophies unless you have some element of fun in there as well. And at the Australian Open, we learned a massive lesson. He was cooked. He was exhausted. I was exhausted. We're being asked to meet the Premier and, you know, oh, it's only going to be 20 minutes, but it takes half a day to get there, and then you don't meet the Premier and you end up in a press conference that you don't know about and this and that. And, you know, half a day practice is gone and he's exhausted, you know. He missed the cut for the third round, and I don't think he would have had the energy to rock up the third day anyway. He was so cooked. But we learned. And then we were in Dubai and he got to spend some time with Adam Scott, and that was awesome. Adam invited him to have lunch in the players' lounge on the last day, but Spud won the event, and the 2 hours of media responsibility meant that he stood up Adam Scott for lunch. So in some...
You put that on his CV.
Correct. In some ways, that story is almost better than having lunch with Adam Scott. You know, apologies, Adam. We'll catch up with you eventually, hopefully. But, you know, there's stories along the way that he has to be present and have fun. And you know, he's on the practice range now and he's loving it because he's actually taking it all in. But he's on the other side of the world in a place he'd never even heard of, and he's hitting golf balls. I mean, how great's that?
And he's playing... I mean, this event obviously is... to term a Aussie description, all abilities. So we have players with all kinds of disabilities here, from seated players, visual players, intellectual players, amputees, neurological players. We have the full spectrum of players with disabilities. And Spud's just one of the players. And what's Spud's position on that? You know, is he well accepted with the other players that have got other disabilities than he has?
Oh, I think the camaraderie is brilliant. If anything, it's only impeded by the language barriers. You know, really, that makes it a bit tricky sometimes.
But well, nobody understands Aussies anyway.
Well, there you go. It's only 10 months. We've been to enough tournaments now where we walk in and we see, you know, faces that he's had a game of golf with. And that's what golf's about. You know, it's you walk onto the first tee and you meet someone for the first time, you spend 4 hours with them. I mean, what other environment does that happen? And you've got a common interest before you start. And that's exactly what these tournaments are about. And just meeting, you know, it is one of the desired outcomes for Spud when we come to these tournaments. He wants to make friends in golf. And if they're, you know, if we can get to a point where if we're in Copenhagen next year and he can look up Frederick for a game of golf, how cool is that?
Yeah.
You know, and likewise, when anyone's in Adelaide or in Australia, come on over. You know.
What would you like the next 12 months to look like? And maybe even past that. You know, so what needs to happen, not necessarily in Australia, but, you know, what needs to happen in this space, this G4D space, to make it more inclusive? Because, you know, there is this conversation around integration and inclusion. And I think a lot of the time, golf gets it a little bit wrong because they start saying, well, yeah, but, you know, we integrate everybody, you know, and actually they don't say that. They say they include everybody, but it's not really inclusion, it's integration. They say, yeah, come along, use the facilities, but those facilities are not really ideal, and the services that are available are not always ideal. Not to say that they're not good, but they're not ideal. Mm. And clearly we want them to be ideal for everybody, that regardless of whether they're a male, female, junior, disabled player, able-bodied player, seated player, visually impaired player. They need to service everybody, and the services around that coaching needs to be the same. All the other services need to be the same. So what would you like to see over the next 12 months?
Well, I think with that, Tony, there's no great problem that has one solution. And it's the inclusion, but it doesn't have to be the same. You know, it's, you know, there's just do it slightly better than last time every time. You know, if it can be, if there's a competition out there that there's a field of eight and it's eight because of logistics or money or whatever, well, how would the world be different if that could be 12? And if there's a tournament that's a field of 90, but it's at risk of not happening next year because of funding, what can we do to just make sure that happens, even if it has to go backwards and be, you know, a field of 40 or something like that? I think we lose sight. We can't solve the world in 12 months, you know. And it's always left. I just look at the G4D program, the Edgar program, and the number of tournaments is just huge. For us, the biggest challenge is to decipher what is an appropriate schedule. We can't. We don't have the funds to be here for 6 weeks and play three tournaments, you know. For Spud in particular, just it's taken us this long just to get an idea of what the schedule looks like and which events we should be targeting and which we should leave. And there are some we should wait until money's a bit better, and others where we hope for an invitation and those sorts of things. But for the greater good of all, I think people should be patient. I think I hear a lot of criticism, and just you can be grateful and still be critical. But I think sometimes the balance is a little bit out of whack. And sport, sure, speak on your own behalf with self-interest, but I think all conversations should be about the greater good for all. And it can't all be the same, you know. And if that means there are events that are specifically for, you know, impaired vision, for example, and Spud can't play in that, so be it. That's still inclusion. Just inclusion doesn't mean everyone's there all the time. Just need to step back from that and really look at what those words mean, and we've got to be really mindful. Like these things take time, you know. How many years have you been in your role?
Yeah, I mean, I've been around this. Well, I first saw this in 2007.
Yeah, right.
Now, and I remember sitting not quite where we are now, because we're actually sat in a very privileged position here, looking over the 10th green and the 10th tee on the elevation here. And it looks beautiful from here. But I was down there, and we had a group of people together. We brought a group of experts together to start to think about what does G4D look like, and what could it look like in a few years' time, from a coaching perspective, only from a coaching perspective.
Yeah.
So it takes time.
Yeah, and you know, Spud and I have been here for 1 minute, and we are benefiting from all that work of you and dozens of other people over the last 20 years, say. And in 20 years' time, there's going to be a whole bunch of other people that will be benefiting from the efforts now. So you can be constructive rather than critical. And I think all dialogue should be about, you know, the greater good of all. And I don't see prize money as being a priority in this space. There are plenty of avenues if you want to earn money because of your golf score. There are plenty of avenues on the planet where you can go and do that if you're good enough. And I don't think prize money makes this space any more inclusive. The hurdles for inclusion comes back to costs of running tournaments, costs of the individuals getting to tournaments, costs of carers. You know, I'm here for 10 days. That's 10 days of income just this trip that I don't have, let alone how many trips I've done in the last 10 months. So when I go home, I'm just, you know, I want to spend 2 days helping find revenues for Spud, but I've actually got to earn my own keep in real life, you know. So to come back to your original question about what can be done, I think it's about just, you know, gratitude, being constructive, being patient, and just make it, if what you're doing today makes it better for one person next week, I think you're doing a good job.
You've got a unique perspective because you're working so closely with the player. Not working, you're supporting. You're not working, you're supporting the player. What do you think the benefits are for a company? It's almost like your sales pitch here now to a company that says, hey, listen, you know, this kid's worth $5,000, $10,000, $15,000 of your hard-earned cash.
Yeah.
Because number one, it's going to give this kid a leg up.
Yeah.
But number two, more importantly, it's going to help you.
Sure.
As an organisation.
Yeah. So as an organisation, so to put it into the corporate context, over the journey, companies that thrive through good times and bad times, and companies that have longevity, are those companies that connect They connect with their clients or their customers or their shareholders, but most of all, they connect with their community. So if you want to put Spud's face on a packet and it's going to sell X number of those packets, I don't think that's going to get through the marketing department. But if leadership of an organisation understands community and they want to connect with community, then if you're going to have an ambassador for your brand, people like Spud are going to be worth every cent. They're ambassadors by default in a way. Spud's marketing training, he'll make mistakes. We're very well supported by Callaway. Spud's part of the Callaway family. He's not sponsored by Callaway as such, which gives a whole lot of freedoms for Spud and Callaway as well. But, we've all been connected in life somehow by someone with a disability. So carve off some of the marketing budget and invest in that part of the community, and I think the return is tenfold. And put people in a environment where they can connect. Spud's great value at a pro-am day or a golf day, corporate golf day. I'd have no hesitation sitting in front of a CEO and saying, if you don't have a golf day, let's build a golf day around Spud, because they'll have stakeholders that play golf. Golf is life. A lot of business gets done on the golf course. I don't have to point that out. Their opportunities are there, are massive, but it's about connection. It's about connect with the person. And if you're a CEO and you've got someone in your family with autism, Spud's a great option. If it's someone that's wheelchair bound, find someone in the golf world that reflects that. So I think that we have to find the people out there in the corporate world that are open to seeing those sorts of connections. And I think there's a plethora of them.
I think that's true. I think, for what is a relatively insignificant amount for a lot of companies, they can make a huge difference to the individual. But also, they have this connection then, as you just pointed out, which almost states that, look, companies like us do things like this, and, we value this. And certainly, you can pick up some of these guys for relatively inexpensive amount of money.
Yep.
And create tremendous value for both the organisation and also for the player. Really make a big difference.
Yep. And I'd take that one step further, Tony, as well. There are organisations out there that don't really want to contribute an insignificant amount either. We're all sick of that on a personal level. We're all sick of the $2 wristband that's landfill. And we know our $2 doesn't get the job done. Don't ask me for $2 and give me a wristband.
Yeah.
Ask me for a contribution that's going to make a significant change, be that money, time, expertise, referral, whatever. There are organisations out there that would not be afraid of sinking some big dollars into this at a macro level, put Spud and other individuals to one side. There's a great opportunity for that. And we've seen that in Australia, the growth of women's sport. It was mandated at a government level through requirements for media coverage. If government funding was going to get involved, it had to be all genders. So all of a sudden that brings a whole range of new logos into a whole range of sports they've never been involved, because women are playing that sport now. And the disability sector is another sector. So, there's plenty of stories within our golfing world that can connect to the corporates, and there's a great opportunity for one or a couple of stakeholders to come involved and have make a contribution as an umbrella, major sponsor as well, and then that trickles down. It's a huge opportunity there. In my career space as a mentor, I've actually worked with a lot of men, primarily men, transitioning from work to retirement, and I use golf as a really good example for that. The most important thing for a man to do after he retires is to maintain his morning rituals. Get up in the morning, brush your teeth, comb your hair if you're fortunate enough to have some. Dress well.
I'm doing okay.
If you go for a walk with your wife in the morning, if you walk the dog, whatever, do those rituals, because it's stepping away from those rituals that leads to depression and disconnection. And golf is great for that. Get you up at whatever time to be, your 7 o'clock tea time. And if you don't rock up, your mates are on the phone going, "Where are you? You're not playing golf." The ecosystems of golf clubs, and not just men, women as well. you take the golf club out of a lot of people's lives and you're leaving a big hole. And I think this side of COVID, governments especially have realised how important golf clubs are to the social capital and the social fabric of people. And this is no, when we talk about inclusion, it just go into the able-bodied world. There should be more inclusion in golf clubs. There should be more support and there should be more understanding that golf is life with that. You know, even the fact that we dress well and we refer to each other as sir. You know, if I say to you, oh, your ball's under the tree there, sir, you know, we go back into our old school etiquette.
Yep.
I'm helping you. If I say your golf ball's under the tree, mate, I'm sledging you. You know, the ball's in the same spot. But golf teaches us those little things. And it's vital, particularly when we say, oh, let's get kids involved with golf. They learn so much in life.
One thing, and probably only two more questions for you, Trent. One thing that you'd like to try and get done in the next 12 months?
Well, I'll bring it back to the self-interest, is to have enough corporate support that Spud can look at a 12-month program and we can strategically say, right, this is the trophy we want to chase, these are the ranking points we want to chase, and these are the experiences we want him to have. If we can plan 12 months in advance, that's a huge difference than, you know, like we don't know what our next tournament is now. So we go home, we catch our breath. And if he wins, that's very different than if he comes last. If he's exhausted or if he's energised, it's very different. If he has a blow-up or he doesn't, that's all. It's a choose-your-own-adventure thing. But to have a schedule, to have the ability to plan ahead, that would be huge. That'd be huge.
And taking a partner or several partners on that journey with you?
Corporate partners?
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And in a manner that gives them great benefit.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to be cap in hand, thanks for the money, let's go spend it. It's like, how can we help your organisation and all of that? Spud's got plenty of time for that, plenty of capacity for that.
Yeah, this isn't a sponsorship photograph at the beginning when they hand over the cheque and a thank you letter.
Build a relationship.
It's a 365-day journey.
Yeah, build a relationship. Because, you know, I often look at this in the world of, you know, there's plenty of celebrities, sports stars that will get an endorsement deal. I pay no attention to those. I pay attention to the ones that get the renewal. Because if you don't get the renewal, that's speaking to the relationship or the integrity or there's some sort of misconnect. So if I'm going to be guided by successful people in that space, it's the ones that, you know, have long-standing relationships over long periods of time.
Last question. One thing that you like the golf industry or Edgar or whoever it is that you mentioned, one thing you'd like us to do to make the world of G4D that little bit kinder, that little bit bigger, that little bit easier to navigate?
Yeah, the one thing, just keep going. Don't quit. I think, just find a way to give another opportunity to another person.
Cool.
I really think so. It's as simple as that. Yeah.
Thanks, buddy.
Pleasure. Anytime.
Good job.
Thanks, Tony.
Thanks for listening to this Edgar interview. You can enjoy our extensive series of articles with golfers with disability thriving through the power of golf at www.edgargolf.com. We will bring you another story soon.